quietly, making people wait. I want to get my slide.
Who's got music?
What is going on?
Today is March 7th, 2017. This is a joint committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. Today is a public hearing on House Bill 5023, the Oregon Medical Board. I'll go ahead and open up a public hearing and on House Bill 5023, and then we'll turn it over to Gregory Joliet.
Joliet.
Oh, it just looks so different on the piece of paper. So, please, Mr. Joliet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the subcommittee. Gregory Joliet with the Legislative Fiscal Office. HB 5023 relates to the budget for the Oregon Medical Board. In OLIS under today's date, you'll find the LFO budget review along with the presentations of the board and DAS. So the board is funded entirely by other funds, mostly from licensure and registration fees. In 2017-19, revenue is projected to increase 11% from the current biennium to about just over $12 million. The board is projected to have a very healthy operating reserve of over $6 million, which equates to about 12 months of operating costs. So the budget is on very strong footing. This morning, we will hear from the Executive Director, Kathleen Haley, followed by CFO Analyst Anthony Padina.
Director Haley, do you wish to come up? And I was worried our second doctor on this committee would miss the Oregon Medical Board's testimony, but Representative Buehler got here in the nick of time.
Put your worries to rest.
Yes. Yes.
I'm glad I worked out that you're chairing today, because I think that the conflict of interest issues would have been.
Attorney to attorney, Director Haley.
Thank you. Good morning, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Rayfield, members of the committee. First, I'd like to introduce one of our board members. Dr. Lisa Leip is with us this morning. As mentioned, Carol Brandt, our business manager, is also here, and I'm Kathleen Haley, the board's executive director. We'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak about the work of the Oregon Medical Board and present the governor's budget. The board is responsible for physicians, podiatric physicians, physician assistants, and acupuncturists. Right now, we have about 21,000 licensed healthcare professionals. The mission of the Oregon Medical Board is to protect the citizens of Oregon. It's also to promote access to quality healthcare. The board is both a licensing and disciplinary body and committed to ensuring that Oregonians have access to quality care. We accomplish that by partnering with other state agencies and the community to further our mission. We also partner with national and international organizations that are similarly organized. We ensure accountability by measuring our outcome performance measures and consistently meeting our performance targets. We operate in a transparent manner in order to inform our licensees and the public about the work we do, and primarily that's through our website. The board also educates or remediates licensees in order to keep them providing health care in the community. The board's first way to look at a case is actually to look at, is there a way to remediate that individual in their practice? I'd like to introduce you to our other board members in addition to Dr. Leip. We have 13 members. Our members serve for three-year terms, and they can serve up to two terms. Right now, we have two vacancies that we hope to be filled in the next couple of months. We've been fortunate to be able to attract the best professionals and public members in the state, and all congressional districts are represented by our medical doctors. We have a variety of specialties. I'll just take a minute, if you don't mind, and introduce you to the board members. So Dr. Sukumar on the left is a geriatrician. She's our chair. Dr. Gubler is a trauma surgeon at Legacy Emanuel. Dr. Leip is here with us today, podiatric physician. And Dr. Kahn is a general surgeon from out at Tualatin. Dr. Covins, an OBG obstetrics and gynecologist from Eugene. Dr. Fisher is at the new medical school in Lebanon. And Ms. Hernandez is one of our two public members. Excuse me, Dr. Hernandez, she has a PhD. and she's at George Fox teaching there. Dr. Lace is a pediatrician from here in Salem, and Dr. Lyons is an ophthalmologist who also works out at the coast at Seaside, so she has two practices, one in Portland and one in Seaside. Dr. Mastrangelo is a general surgeon in Bend, and Ms. Peng is our physician assistant member. She's new to the board. Board members are compensated for their time spent in medical board meetings, but they have not been compensated for the hundreds of hours that they spend preparing for those meetings. And part of what we have in our package 103 is a way to provide them a stipend for those many hours. In visiting with Dr. Leip about the amount of time she spends preparing for each meeting, it's about 30 hours. And I think that in order to do justice with all the cases they have, that's what they need to do.
Just a quick question. I noticed you said you have two board vacancies.
Yes.
How often do you have vacancies, and how easy is it to fill those vacancies?
Chair Rayfield, I think that it's become more difficult because of the workload. We provide a computer for our members, and then we load the cases onto a Dropbox for them. And the number of pages can go from 10 to 20,000. Now, that includes patient records, if the board members want to look at the actual patient records. So that includes everything. So there is a real time commitment to this service, and I think that's what's made it more challenging.
So I just kind of felt, how difficult is it to fill the positions? Like, how long do you have vacancies for? How often do the vacancies occur?
Well, it depends on whether an individual serves one or two terms, mm-hmm. and do they complete their terms. So they turn over regularly. They can do 6 years. We really like our members to serve two terms. But some people, because of life circumstances, can only do one term. So they turn over regularly. And it becomes challenging at times. We are working with the governor's office, and we have some good candidates lined up for the two open seats. We would like a primary care physician, and then we have a public member position.
But do you ever have times where you don't have people to fill these positions?
Well, right now we have these vacancies. That's unusual for us.
Okay. But you have people. You said you have candidates, though. So I'm asking, do you ever have board positions that are open where you do not have candidates to fill those positions?
No.
Okay, so thank you. Yes, Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How long have these two vacant positions been open?
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Rayfield, Senator Winters, I think just a couple of months. And actually, Dr. Sukumar will be leaving, and we have other people lined up for them as well.
Representative Bueller.
Thank you, Chair Rayfield. I just wanted to express my appreciation to the medical providers that serve on the board. It's a lot of work. I've consulted in years past for you all, and these are difficult cases with profound implications, not only for the medical providers, but also patients. And so there's some high-stakes decisions here. I'm just curious, how much do the board members get paid?
Co-Chair Representative Bueller, $250 per diem. Plus their expenses.
And that doesn't count their preparation?
Correct.
Looking through 10,000 pages?
Right.
I just hope the minimum wage requirements don't kick in.
I would just echo what Representative Dr. Bueller said. Having also served as a consultant for the board in days past and worked closely, I had a close colleague who was a doctor on the board many, many years ago, and I would see her in the old days. This was pre-Dropbox and everything, literally with one of those little luggage trolleys and huge traditional briefcases, the big square ones stacked up on top of that with pages and pages of documents. It's a lot of work to do well. But I believe there are a couple people in the queue for the next round of executive appointments, if I'm not mistaken. So I think they're on the verge of being filled.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, please, Senator Winters.
Since we're piling on, and I'm not going to pile on the doc side, I'm going to pile on Ms. Hadley's side, because I've worked with her seriously. I mean, she's been the executive director for this organization for some time, and you have to have somebody who keeps it going and making certain that it's meeting the objectives, and I've you know, over the years have worked with her, and she's made tons of presentations to this body. And so, you know, the work that's getting done and all the recruitment, all those efforts, thank you, Ms. Hadley.
Co-Chair, Senator Winters, thank you very much for your kind words.
Please continue.
So our board members do set the direction and the high standards for this agency, and they work through committees. This committee work is pretty involved. Our investigative committee meets once a month. They begin at 7:30 in the morning, and they work through the close of business. Our administrative affairs, and Dr. Leip has served on that committee. Dr. Leip has now kindly agreed to chair our administrative affairs committee, and that oversees our budget, our performance measures, and our strategic plan. The board also has responsibility for emergency medical services in the scope of practice arena only, so we don't license or discipline that profession. We also sometimes come up with some other committees to do extra work, and one we have right now is a wellness coalition that we've started about 18 months ago with different members of the psychiatric community and the associations to look at some of the areas around stress and burnout for physicians and our other licensees. We've consistently worked through with a strategic plan that sets our goals for the next couple of years. It helps us to stay focused on our mission, and it provides an evaluation tool and ties in, as I said, to the performance measures. We update it quarterly through our management team, and then that is also shared with our board members. We do have a complete copy of that strategic plan if you wanted to look at it, and it's in our appendix. We do have a comprehensive set of outcome-based key performance measures that allow us to assess and manage our performance. And as I said, they're linked to our mission and our strategic plan. Results are reviewed by our management team as well as our board, and then we can make changes as we need to. We do expect to continue to meet or exceed our key performance measures in the next biennium and beyond. Some of the examples of some process improvements are we have an award-winning online status report that's available for applicants, and we recently made that available to our renewing licensees. So someone who's a licensee of the board can go online 24/7 and find out where they are, either in the application process or the renewal of their license. We've also developed a secure upload portal so folks can send us documents and they're done securely and we can get them again 24/7. And then we've instituted video conferences for meeting and interviews. So for example, the other day our medical director and I wanted to interview an applicant for licensure who had had driving under the influence charge brought against him. So we were able to do that without him traveling from Pittsburgh for that kind of an interview. We could do it through video conferencing. We are completely other funded. So the bulk of our funds do come from our renewal of physician licenses. And we don't work in silos within the agency itself. We work across disciplines and departments to continuously improve our processes and provide services in the most effective way possible. We also get very involved in charitable fundraising, so we just finished February where we were working on the food drive. We are fortunate in that we have one of our staff is a professional baker, so I think we all gained about 10 pounds in February working on the charitable food drive. We do partner across associations as well, and we give regular presentations to the medical and professional schools to carry out our mission. I'd like to turn to the individual areas now. If there are no further questions at this time. The first one would be license services, and again, we've used technology to try to expedite those. As you can see, we have a lot of online services. Doesn't mean we don't get our telephone calls, though, and we do have a call center that's available during regular business hours to answer any questions from applicants or licensees. So right now, with our technology, an individual can apply for a license, renew their license, reactivate their license, check the status of their application, change their address, or update a supervising physician, physician assistant practice agreement. We have an investigations and compliance department, and this slide here shows the inputs and outcomes of that department. We also have compliance officers, so once an individual has been placed under probation or other disciplinary action, they go out into the field and meet with the licensee in their office practice and make sure that they're following the terms of the agreement. So as you can see, this snapshot from 2016.
Representative Alonso Leon.
Sorry, I have a quick question. Can you go back to the previous slide? Can you give me an example of what the licensing practice is, just so I can have a better understanding? And it says that it takes 1 day to issue a license, but I'm sure there's more to it than that.
Yes. Co-chairs, Representative Alonso Leon, there is more to it than that. We are able to complete the once the process is completed, we can issue the license within a day. That's assuming that there are no yellow or red flags in that application. If that happens, then it goes to the board. But the individual does have to get for us their materials from medical school, from their residency, employment. We check on any other licenses in other states. There are two national data banks, so we check both of them. They also need to report to us if they have board certification in their specialty. So we do require a lot of materials. We do have an expedited process for individuals who have been licensed in another state. So if they've successfully been licensed for a year in another state, we don't ask them to go back and get their medical school or their residency. We accept that from those originating states.
Follow up. So just to give me an example, what's the time frame in which this whole process takes place?
Co-chairs, Representative Alonso Leon, it can take 30 days or more for them to get all their materials. And we try to remind them so that if they put in part of it but they haven't completed it, our staff will notify them and say, it's been a while since we've heard from you. And that's partly why we like that online status report, so that they can check that all the time, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Please continue.
So, as you can see, in 2016, we received over 700 complaints against our licensees. There were 77 public orders originating from those investigations. Right now, our investigators have a caseload of about 62 cases at any given time, and we think that's a little bit high. We had a legal extern look at the board cases in 2013. She spent about 4 months every day looking through the cases for a four-year period and found that the board was 97% consistent, and she was able to look at the 3% inconsistencies and found them explainable. So we've been trying to...
What does 97% consistent mean?
We looked at a behavioral area, and we also looked at a competency area, prescribing. And she was able to look and see, are the terms of those orders consistent over time? And we also looked at whether they were consistent over membership. So even if there was a shift in board membership, were those decisions consistent? And the answer was yes.
So were these being applied evenly throughout a period of time? Okay.
Exactly.
If I may, Mr. Chair, there were some concerns in the past, and Senator Bates and I were closely involved working with Ms. Haley and members of the board at a time when there was a certain amount. There's always concern among some licensees, mostly not legitimate, that they're being treated unfairly. But I appreciate the fact that we have documentation now that, in fact, the board is being very consistent in their application, because some people were making claims in the past that that was not the case. And it's great to have this study to demonstrate that level of consistency. So I think we've seen a lot of changes that Ms. Haley has helped effect at the board in terms of improving that consistency and focusing more on improving people's level of practice rather than simply being punitive. So I think the board's moved in a direction that's really constructive and positive in that regard, and I appreciate that study being done. It's good evidence. Do we have that in our... Do we have any documentation of that?
Chair Steiner, Hayward, I'd be happy to provide it to the committee.
Would you be kind enough?
Sure.
Because that'd be useful to have in the public record, Ms. Haley.
Yes.
Thank you.
Do that. The board participates in the Health Professional Services Program along with the Nursing, Dental, and Pharmacy Boards, and that is not an alternative to discipline. Rather, it is a vehicle for those with substance abuse or mental health disorders to be able to get confidential treatment. The board does not know about those who go and participate on their own unless there's some violation of the terms of that agreement with the Health Professional Services Program. The board and the legislature in 2016 shifted the administration of that program from the health authority to the boards. So we're in the process right now of issuing an RFP in order to have the contracts renewed coming up in the next year or so. Carol, who's with us this morning, is the director of the business services aspect of the board, and that includes all the support for our programs, procurement, budget, accounting, payroll, and the technology. They also maintain our website, and we're constantly trying to improve that because there's so much information on there, but we want to make sure that it's accessible to the public in particular. We also share our expertise with other boards when they need it, so we've been assisting the dental board with their human resources as well as their budgeting function. Some of the operating environment that drives our agency are the evolution of the medical profession, which seems to be changing on a daily basis, societal factors such as confidentiality and transparency, and the technology factors, which we've tried to leverage as much as possible. As an agency, we also have responsibility to multiple stakeholders, but it's paramount that we keep the patient first. As I've mentioned, we use technology to modernize our activities. We've also enhance processes for re-entry to practice. So since 2003, we've had 76 licensees return to practice. We set up programs for them, work with them to try to bring them back to speed. We actually had one psychiatrist from Eugene who had been out of practice for about 14 years, and she was able to come back and be of great service to the community there. We also set up a communications team, and we partner in-state and nationally to look to best practices. Most of all, we try to listen to our customers. We get our customer satisfaction surveys back, and we try to take their hints and ideas for us, and we try to implement them as well. In looking at our budget since 2000, in the last 16 years, you can see that our medical board licensees have increased 61%, while our fees have only increased 11%, overall Oregon population 18%. And we've been able to keep our fees lower than the consumer price index. We want to be sure not to tax health care providers out of Oregon due to high fees, so we do try to keep them very reasonable. Some of the ways in which we've done this is to work with the Department of Justice to settle our cases, where possible, avoiding contested case hearing. And whenever possible, we try to leverage technology, as I mentioned earlier.
Representative Bueller.
Can you go back one slide?
Okay. I mean, that's impressive results. How do you achieve that and keep your fees below the level of growth of population and your activities? It seems like we see very few state agencies able to run efficiently under what they say is current service levels.
Co-chairs, Representative Bueller, I think much of it belongs to you all because I think you've adequately funded us in the past, and we've tried to leverage the monies that we've been given by using technology, as I mentioned, to the utmost. We've had a robust IT team. We've had a business manager who's very good at watching how we spend our money. So I think we've been careful with the dollars we've been given, and you've been kind enough to adequately fund our agency.
And by you mean him paying his license fees every other year. Senator Hayward.
No, I'm just raising my hand as somebody else who pays them.
Mr. Chair.
Please, Senator.
I see that perplexed look on Representative Bueller's face, and I had complimented Ms. Hadley because you're correct. This is a very well-ran agency, even though we have, you know, she talked about the contribution from the legislative side, but we have other agencies where we've made contributions that have not actually produced some of the results as Mrs. Hadley is talking about. And I have to give, you know, her some of the credit as well, and her staff, because without that, we might see numbers that were different. You know, your perplexus is well placed in addition, but when you see where she's managed to keep the fees reasonable so that we don't have runaway costs, she's managed to actually stay within budget. So that Representative Bueller is a good administrator.
This next chart shows our fee comparison, and Oregon is in blue. So other than the physician assistant one, we're generally lower than our other states, and I was looking at the physician assistant one in, I don't know how Washington does it, but theirs are a lot lower than ours. But other than that, we're really trying to keep our fees low, and particularly in comparison with the lower, with our other neighboring states. We are a 100% other funded agency, and the renewal fees, which were discussed on the previous slide, are really the bulk of our agency revenue. That's 98% of our revenue, 85% from physicians, and 13% from our other healthcare professionals. About 2% of the revenue does come from fines and penalties in the sale of our licensee lists. At this point, I'd like to turn the presentation over to our business manager, Ms. Carol Brandt.
Good morning, Co-Chairs Rayfield and Steiner Hayward, members of the committee. I am Carol Brandt, business manager for the board. The board has few major budget issues. As a 100% other funded agency, we receive no tax dollars, and again, we thank you for providing budgets adequate to fulfill our mission effectively. Our only program is licensing, discipline, remediation, and education for the four professions we regulate. However, as a regulatory agency, we must continually balance the expectations of our stakeholders with our mission to protect the public. We've been successful in maintaining this balance because we've had the financial resources to provide the level and quality of service our stakeholders expect. The board has worked to find efficiencies, and we've been able to keep our fees low while continuing to provide excellent customer service. The most significant budget driver for the agency is our cost for personal services, which make up about 64% of our estimated expenditures for the 17-19 biennium. One potential budget issue for the board is the funds that we transfer to other state agencies. There are significant pass-through payments from our licensees to fund other state programs. We are supportive of statewide priorities, but our licensees have generally come to become responsible for partial funding of the Oregon Health Sciences University Library, the statewide prescription monitoring program, and the statewide workforce data collection efforts. For the 17-19 biennium, we expect to transfer about $1.2 million to fund other state programs. Moving on to our policy packages, this next slide shows the packages that were recommended by the governor. There are no fee increases proposed. All packages are financed using current revenue streams. As an other funded agency, these packages have no impact on the general funds available for other state services. I'll just briefly describe each of these packages. 102 is the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact. This was initially intended to further expedite the licensing process. However, the board is now able to approve licenses on a daily basis, and we had some legal concerns about the compact, so we are not pursuing this initiative at this time. Package 103, the board membership package, supports the agency goal of investigating complaints and taking appropriate action to protect public safety. The package is a companion to Senate Bill 60 and allows past or emeritus board members to fill in during a current board member's planned absence. Allowing emeritus board members to serve will help the agency manage its increasing workload by providing flexibility in scheduling. Board and committee members are busy professionals who must actively be practicing. They receive compensation for their time at meetings, but as you've heard, they do not currently receive any compensation for the countless hours of preparation time required for each meeting. Their service on the board is a significant public service to the people of Oregon. This package proposes to provide additional compensation to acknowledge and recognize that time the board member provides serving the state. Package 104, our physician wellness package, is a product of the ongoing partnership between the board and other public and private stakeholders to create a statewide program providing local delivery of support services for burnout, stress, and depression. The proposed wellness program is anticipated to provide a safe harbor of free confidential counseling and coaching services tailored to the needs of healthcare providers. The program will not shield practitioners from the consequences of their actions. Safe, quality patient care is paramount. Counseling will not be reportable, but impairment will be. The program is intended to include research, monitoring of outcomes, and matching funds to ensure statewide program delivery. There's a documented strong tie between physician wellness and patient safety. National studies suggest that at least 50% of U.S. physicians are experiencing professional burnout, characterized by exhaustion, cynicism, and reduced effectiveness. Burnout is higher among physicians than workers in other fields.
Please, Senator Steiner.
I apologize. I was distracted by something else and missed on slide. Oh, you guys don't have slide numbers. The slide about policy option packages, package 102, the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact. We've seen a bunch of these interstate compacts come through, and while in general I'm supportive of the concept, they've mostly been policy bills, but yours is a policy option package, and it's not a policy bill itself. There's a second part of this question.
So, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, initially we were moving forward with that when the budget was put together. Over time, we've worked with the Interstate Compact Commission and found that we would not be able to ask our personal history questions, that we would be obligated to issue a license to anyone who is part of the compact. And so given that gap of time, and we've actually had some applicants that would have gotten a license under that compact, that we would not give a license to.
Got it. Thank you for clarifying, because that was exactly my concern, and that's been the concern of about several of the other interstate licensure compacts, that they give too little discretion to the local state for its, especially if it has more rigorous standards. So I'm pleased to hear that that's been shelved for the moment. Thank you. Sorry for the lag in asking the question.
Resuming on the physician wellness package, burnout has been shown to influence quality of care, patient safety, turnover, and patient satisfaction. So the goal of this initiative is to provide upstream assistance to practitioners to enhance patient safety and quality care. Package 105, our investigative resources package, adds a one FTE investigator three position. The board recognizes that resolving complaints quickly without sacrificing a thoughtful and deliberate process is best for the public and our licensees. The agency has not added an investigator position since 2010, and during these past 7 years, cases beyond initial screening have increased by about 82%, and cases are becoming increasingly complex as the practice of medicine evolves. In addition, electronic medical records now produce about 50% more documentation for review, and this can be hundreds of pages of detailed medical records for each case. Many cases also require the investigator to work with our medical director and a medical consultant who can provide specialty medical expertise. Each of our six investigators currently carry between 60 to 65 cases. The addition of this position would reduce caseload to about 50 to 55 cases per investigator. Additional investigative staff will add the resources we need to complete investigations carefully and quickly to reach a board decision without delay. It will also increase the agency's bench strength, so we have the resources to shift caseloads as necessary to respond to planned and unplanned staff vacancies. And finally, our Package 106, the Licensing Resources Package, proposes to increase a part-time administrative specialist position to full-time. We last increased the number of staff available to process license applications and renewals in 2009. in those last 8 years, our overall licensees have increased by 20%. Increasing this position to full-time will help us to recruit quality staff and continue to absorb and manage the growing workload, supporting the agency goal of improving access to quality care through efficient licensure and renewal of license. And now to Ms. Kathleen Haley.
Good morning again, Chairs Steiner, Hayward, and Rayfield, members of the committee. Just finally wrap up here for you with our accomplishments. In addition to February being Food Drive Month, one of our other happy times at the board is our January staff meeting, where we look back on the year and see what some of our accomplishments were. So this slide reflects some of the work that's been done in the last year by our staff that goes above and beyond really the regular day-to-day work. And finally, our last slide shows us all a picture of our wonderful staff that we have. We're very proud of them. They're a mission-driven group. They're not there for themselves, I think. The reason they're attracted to work with us is because they're really behind the mission of patient safety and access to quality care for Oregonians. And with this governor's budget, we do propose no fee increases. The position actions that we've targeted are going to allow the agency to respond to the increases in workload while still maintaining our customer service. The proposed funding will allow us to continue to fulfill our mission, and we'd like to thank our budget analysts as well as our partners at the various medical associations who we've reviewed this budget with and who are supportive. Thank you, and we're happy to answer any other questions you might have.
And the one question I had is the policy option packages, going through the cost of each policy option package, and then also in a long-term sense, if we did apply for those. I know you have a healthy ending fund balance. I'm curious, obviously, that when we generally increase fees, we kind of expect that that's going to last over a period of time, and then eventually we're going to have to increase fees at some point in the future. And so with the additional expenditures of adding the policy option packages, I would assume that that would move sooner the date that you would have to increase fees, and just kind of curious when that date would be, how much it shifts, and kind of the thought process behind that.
Co-Chair Rayfield, I'd be happy to get you the dates. We can look for that for you. Also, to keep in mind that our licensee base, it depends on how much that increases, and sometimes that can offset the use of those funds as well. Mm-hmm. But I'd be happy to get you that the date.
Okay, and then in the cost of the policy option packages?
Yes, I believe we have that now, don't we, the cost of the packages altogether?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I know, I was looking for it.
It wasn't in here. So. It's I normally have this printed off, but it's not in here, so I was just kind of on it.
Again, Co-Chairs Rayfield and Steiner Hayward, members of the committee. I'm Carol Brandt.
Oh, there we are.
Our packages, our policy packages altogether total about $600,000.
Perfect, and I'm looking at it right here. So
okay.
Perfect. Thank you so much. So, other questions? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much, and we'll turn over to Mr. Medina.
Co-Chair Rayfield, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anthony Medina, and I'm an analyst in the Chief Financial Office. Today, I'll be presenting the governor's recommended budget for the Oregon Medical Board. The mission of the Oregon Medical Board is to protect the health, safety, and well-being of Oregon citizens by regulating the practice of medicine in a manner that promotes access to quality care. An emergent issue for the agency, emerging issue affecting the agency is investigations. The agency's primary tool for ensuring public safety is having the ability to investigate complaints. The governor's budget enhances existing services, improves physician wellness, and increases agency's investigative ability.
Oh, please, Representative Buehler.
Yeah, Kathleen, could you just outline briefly how you intend to improve physician wellness? What kind of program?
Yes, co-chairs Rayfield and Steiner Hayward, Representative Bueller. We've had this coalition going for about 18 months. We've set up some protocols for setting up programs around the state. The first program originated at OHSU. It's been operational for at least 12 years for residents and faculty. It's been used extensively for counseling, free counseling services in a private setting. Lane County mirrored a similar program after a number of physician suicides there. Then the Metropolitan Medical Society also established such a program. We've now been working actually with some of the physicians over at St. Charles to get a program set up there as well. So what we would like to do is address the needs around the state and not just in the valley and Central Oregon, but we'd like to get to the coast and Eastern Oregon and have some matching funds for physician groups that want to set up a similar program. We would like to also be able to offer telehealth services. So, for example, through the Lane County program, if we could have some telehealth programs there for physicians around the state. And we want to measure this because they've done that at OHSU and successfully noted how the program has worked. So we want to set up some research to see if this is really of value. So that's how those funds would be used.
Please. So you have metrics already from that OHSU has implemented for evaluation of these wellness programs?
Chair Steiner, Hayward, Rayfield, Representative Bueller, for the OHSU program only. The Metropolitan Medical Society program has only been up for a year. I can get you some information from Lane County because that's been operational for a couple of years now.
So is physician suicide, do you track that data? Does someone track that?
Co-chairs, Representative Bueller, not to my knowledge. We have had a liaison program with the Oregon Psychiatric Association in the past, and they have brought those instances to us, but there's no one really tracking that. And I think in part it's because it isn't always known based on the cause of death.
Please continue.
Go ahead. Here's a graph of the agency's expenditure history, which includes expenditures for 17-19 in the governor's budget. Here's a graph explaining the expenditures relative in a pie chart. Not much of a story here. Personnel services and service and supplies typically have this two-thirds to one-third relationship. So this is average in a regulatory board. And here's a graph depicting the agency's revenues for 17-19. As you can see, there's an increase, anticipated increase in revenue. That increase is associated with a growing licensee base, not an increase in fees. The governor's budget supports current services and makes investments in the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact, physician wellness, board member compensation, and licensing resources, in addition to adjustments in the DAS price list for state government service charges. With that concludes my presentation, and I can answer any questions the committee might have for me.
Are there any questions, please, for Representative Alonso
Leon? Just a brief comment. Since we're getting so many people getting their license, that means that we're getting more doctors out in the community.
Co-Chair Rayfield, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Representative Alonso Leon, I would agree.
All right, any other questions? All right, there is there anybody that would like to, is there anything else that you would like to present?
No,
Director?
Thank you.
Okay. With that, there's actually no one signed up for public testimony today, and I won't allow the two doctors on the panel to go down to testify, so cross them off the list. Is there anybody in the audience that does want to testify that for some reason did not sign up? Okay. Going once, going twice.
It's an option.
Really, Mr. Gallon? You're going to miss this opportunity?
Right? You got to earn your pay here. Mr. Jolivet, is there anything for the rest of today before we close out the hearing?
Nope.
All right. So with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn early today. Thank you.
Thank you.